The following is a commentary on Hosea chapter 4, verse 17, by Jeremiah Burroughs, 1650. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. You have heard before that God gives warning to Judah to take heed of the sins of Israel, of the 10 tribes, and many arguments are used. Some you have heard and others remain. The 17th verse has 2 strong arguments for it. First, Ephraim is joined to idols. Ephraim, engaging himself in the way of false worship, is now so enwrapped in that sin and guilt that he cannot tell how to get out. He is joined to it. And it is the way of idolaters and the curse of God upon them that when they are once got into that sin, it is very hard ever to recover them out of it. Take heed, Judah, that you come not into it. Secondly, as he is joined, so being strongly set upon his idols, so the Lord has given him up to his idols. There is this curse of God upon him to say, let him alone. O Judah, take heed what you do then, so that these words are brought in as 2 arguments to persuade Judah not to do as Israel has done. And indeed all the remainder too of this chapter is brought in this way. To speak then of these, Ephraim is joined to idols. Ephraim was dead long ago. Ephraim was one of the patriarchs, the child of a patriarch. At least he was a grandchild of Jacob, and he had a great blessing upon him, Genesis 48:20. And thee shall Israel bless, and shall say, God make thee like Ephraim. Ephraim had a special blessing upon him, such a blessing as that the rest of the tribes should say, God bless thee and make thee like Ephraim. For Joseph's tribe was an Ephraim, a Manasseh. And yet now it is said that Ephraim is joined to idols. Why Ephraim? Because of the chief of the 10 tribes that were now joined to idols were the children of Ephraim. For Ephraim and Manasseh stood in stead of Joseph, that patriarch. And the children, I say, of Ephraim were those that were joined to idols, which were the chief of the 10 tribes. From whence? The first note is this. The children that are wicked, they are great disgraces and dishonors to their parents. Ephraim, that was dead long before, suffers dishonor by his children that are now joined to idols. Let children, out of reverence and respect to their parents, take heed what they do. Secondly, all the 10 tribes were joined to idols. Why then is Ephraim named rather than any of the other? The reason is this, because that Jeroboam and the princes were all of the tribe of Ephraim, and therefore all is put upon them. He does not say the 10 tribes are joined to idols, but Ephraim is, because indeed the idolatry of all the other 9 tribes was from the idolatry of Jeroboam and the princes that were of the tribe of Ephraim. From whence another note is this, that the governors of people are usually the causes of the evil of the people, and especially in the point of false worship. If governors be superstitious and idolaters, if they will favor idolatry, all the people usually, or the generality of them, will go that way. They contract the guilt of the idolatry of all the false worship of the people. Governors, therefore, that are superstitious and idolatrous have woeful guilt upon them, and we have cause to lament their condition exceedingly. We read in the 2nd of Matthew, where the wise men came to inquire after the king of the Jews. They came from a far country. They said they had seen a star, and they desired to know where the place was that he should be born in. It was a mighty work, and such a work as did trouble Herod, and all Jerusalem with him was in a mighty trouble, what this should be. A strange thing that such wise men should come so far from a far country, and tell us of a star that appeared, and that a king of the Jews should be born. All the people were troubled together with the king, so as that they called a council of all the chief priests and the scribes, and such as were expert in the law, to know where Christ should be born. and his council told them that the place was to be in Bethlehem. And upon that, wise men, according to their direction or according to the star, were to find out the place. But mark, you do not read of any one of all the people of Jerusalem that went with the wise men, although they were stirred at it and thought it a wonderful work that a star should thus appear, and that these wise men should come and inquire for the King of the Jews, and that their own teacher should tell them that he was to be born at Bethlehem. And thereupon they went to Bethlehem to search it out. Yea, I say, we do not read that any of the people went with them. No, they dared not because of Herod. Herod that was then their prince, he did not frame that way. And therefore not one of the people would follow after the wise men to search after Christ. So it is usual that when governors discountenance the ways of God, the people generally do as they do, and especially governors that are in ways of superstition and idolatry, and together with those ways shall give people liberty to satisfy their lusts, then they will cleave to them indeed. As Jeroboam and the rest of the princes did, they set up a false way of worship, and together with that, they gave liberty to the people to satisfy their lusts, as appeared partly before, and will further appear in this prophecy. And this was one special way by which they gained the hearts of the people to them in their false worship, because they gave scope and liberty to their lusts. Let any princes and governors set up and countenance any false way of worship, and together with it give liberty to the people for the satisfying of their lusts. There is no cause to wonder that such princes should have so many to cleave to them, seeing the people know that by cleaving to them they shall have liberty to enjoy their lusts. That is the second note. Thirdly, Ephraim is joined to idols. The word in the original signifies, in a participle, such a kind of joining as their enchanters and the ways of their conjuration join their unclean spirits to them. That is the propriety of the word. So Ephraim is joined to his idols, cleaves to his idols, as some turn it, is glued to his idols, and that unclean spirit that carries him to the ways of idolatry, he comes to be one with him, as it is said of believers that they are joined to the Lord Christ, and so they are one spirit. So idolaters are joined to the devil, and are become one spirit. That is the meaning. They are glued to that unclean spirit, and so they come to be fastened to their idols. That is the propriety of the word. From thence, note that idolaters' hearts are very strongly glued to the ways of idolatry, so that it is very hard for any to get off their hearts. Jeremiah 8:5. They take fast hold of deceit. They will not easily be taken off. In Jeremiah 2:10-11, pass over unto Kedar, and consider diligently, and see if there be such a thing. Hath a nation changed their gods, which are yet no gods? Kedar was one of the vilest places of all. Woe is me, says David, that I have my habitation in the tents of Kedar. God says, go thither and see whether they have changed their gods. Those that are the most vilest idolaters, yet they will not change their gods. Their hearts are joined to their gods. Let their hearts be never so base and their gods never so vile. As the Egyptians, they would worship leaves and garlic and cats, base and vile things, and yet they would not be taken off from their idolatrous ways. I have read of a people in India that worshipped apes' tooths, and when it was taken from them, they offered an inconceivable sum of treasure to regain their idol again. They are set upon their ways of idolatry, though it be never so foolish, never so sottish. And especially if idolaters have outward prosperity to be as the glue and cement, to join their hearts to that way of false worship, then they are joined indeed. Take men that are superstitious, and if they do prosper in their ways, this their prosperity is a glue and cement to join their hearts strongly to those ways. There is no getting of them off from them. And though they have been long in that way of false worship, they do not like it ever a whit the worse. I beseech you, observe this note. In anything that is false worship, antiquity will make it venerable, and they will plead for it by antiquity, and say it is thus and thus ancient, and their forefathers did thus and thus. For observe it, in ways of the true worship of God men are quickly weary, and because they have had it a great while, they desire some novelty, some new thing. You shall have many people much affected with the truth when it is first revealed to them. And when they come to hear sermons or such exercises, their hearts are much taken with them. But within a while they loathe this manna, and so fall off quickly from it. So that in the worship of God, that is true and right, there the continuance in it makes it to be less esteemed. But in false worship, the longer people continue in it, the more they esteem it, and their antiquity makes it to be venerable. They do argue for their antiquity to make it the more honorable. This is the wickedness of the hearts of men. But will idolaters thus join to their idols? Will their hearts be glued to them? Are they willing to be one spirit with them? Oh, how much more should we join to the Lord our God, join to Jesus Christ to be as one spirit with Him? The exhortation of Barnabas in Acts 11:23, that with full purpose of heart they should cleave to the Lord, is a seasonable exhortation even at all times. Oh, let us cleave to God in His worship, so as whatsoever arguments are used, yet our hearts may never be taken off from the love of the truth. But let us say as once that martyr did, though you may pluck my heart out of my bowels, yet you shall never pluck the truth out of my heart. And the less there is between God and our hearts, the more firmly shall we be glued to Him. Those that are godly, gracious, they need not the glue, the cement of outward prosperity to join their hearts to God. But godliness alone, the sweetness that they find in God alone, is enough to join their hearts to Him, even in an everlasting covenant. Those men who seem to be joined to God in His worship, yet if it be the glue and cement of outward respects that joins their hearts to God, they will quickly fall off from it. But those that are immediately joined to God, they will forever keep to Him, when there is nothing but God in their hearts together, nothing between God and them. Ephraim is joined to idols. The word that is translated idols signifies pain and trouble, for their idols did in the conclusion bring them to pain and trouble. There are two reasons why it signifies pain and trouble. First, because that idolaters were willing to endure much pain and trouble in the worshiping of their idols, which should teach us not to account the worship of God tedious, though it be somewhat hard to the flesh. Idolaters would endure pain and trouble to the flesh in the worshiping of their idols. Secondly, such worship will bring pain and trouble to them in the conclusion. But this is not the principal thing intended here. But the force of the argument is, Ephraim is joined to idols, therefore don't meddle with him. Do not you do as they do. So that when we see people set up false ways of worship in any place, and they are set upon those false ways of worship, we must take heed of communicating with them in these false ways of worship. Let them alone. Let them go, saith God. He is joined to his idols. Let them go. First, this is a speech to Judah. Let Ephraim go, saith God to Judah. Ephraim, they indeed are the 10 tribes, and most of the people of the Jews. But yet, seeing they set up false worship, let them go. Have nothing to do with them. Do not converse with them. It is a heavy judgment of God upon a people when the saints shall let them alone, when they shall withdraw from them. If God had any saints in the world, they were in Judah. And God says to these saints of His, let Israel alone and withdraw from them. Have nothing to do with them. Though they be your brethren and countrymen, yet let them alone. Many wicked men, they make nothing of this, and say, when as God's people that are the most strict and holy and gracious, shall withdraw from them, and as heretofore they went out of the land because they saw it so defiled with superstitious vanities, let them all go, say they, we are well rid of them, and who knows but you may meet with such expressions before you die. that you may have many that will be willing to be rid of those that are most godly and gracious. Well, whatsoever men think and say, let them know it is a dreadful curse of God upon them, upon a nation, for the saints of God to withdraw and go from them. For so God threatens it as one of the most dreadful curses. Judah, let them alone, have nothing to do with them. So when God shall speak to his saints that they shall withdraw from others of their brethren, I say it is one of the most dreadful judgments of God upon a people, whatever they think of it. You know that expression that you have of the most fearful curse of God upon those that are wicked. In 1 Corinthians 16:22, he that loves not the Lord Jesus, let him be anathema, maranatha. Anathema, let him be accursed. But maranatha, the meaning of that is, the Lord comes. It signifies the Lord in the Chaldean Syriac, therefore in Daniel 4:19 and Daniel 5:23. There that word is translated Lord. That is, when men shall forsake Christ and the ways of his worship, after means have been used with them, then anathema, maranatha. That is, let all the saints of God leave them to the coming of Jesus Christ. Let them alone. Do not meddle with them. When you have used all means you can, then withdraw yourselves from them and leave them to the coming of Christ. And Christ will deal with them well enough. Let them not only be excommunicated. For some, when they were excommunicated, though the saints withdrew themselves from them, yet they sought to gain them again. But some were so direfully excommunicated that they were to be let alone to the coming of Christ. So when those that are godly shall first labor to deal with such as are wicked and ungodly by admonition and persuasion and counsel, and they shall be refractory and stout and stubborn, and be as swine to trample under feet those pearls, or as dogs to turn again and rend them, they are then to let them alone, that is, to let them alone to the coming of Jesus Christ. And even in their own hearts say, well, we see no means can do them any good. Maranatha, the Lord comes and he shall deal with them himself when he comes. Let them alone. The Lord speaks to the prophet as if he should say, Hosea, you can do no good upon them. It is in vain for you to meddle with Ephraim. Let them alone. Just as Christ gave order to his disciples when he sent them forth to preach the gospel, that if any place rejected them, they should go away and take the dust off their feet. It shall be a testimony against them, he says. So God says here to the prophet, let them alone. Don't spend your strength any more upon them. The exhortations that come from the saints, but especially from ministers of the gospel, from ministers of God, be they what they will be, they are pearls and precious things, and God will not have them despised. He will not have them spent in vain. Therefore, there is a time even for the ministers of God to let people alone. In Exodus 33:7, we read that when the people had notoriously sinned against God, Moses took the tabernacle of the congregation and pitched it without the camp. He went away from the people and did separate from them till they repented and would not come amongst them. He took the tabernacle and went away from the camp at a great distance from them, more than ordinary. So there is a time even for the ministers of God to hold their peace and let people alone. In Exodus 33:7, we read that when the people had notoriously sinned against God, Moses took the tabernacle of the congregation and pitched it without the camp. He went away from the people and did separate from them until they repented and would not come amongst them. He took the tabernacle and went away from the camp at a great distance from them, more than ordinary. So there is a time even for the ministers of God to hold their peace and let people alone. Many people think they are troubled with ministers, and they could wish they would let them alone. Why do they trouble us? We were quiet enough before they came. We would they would let us alone. There are many guilty consciences that cannot come to a powerful ministry. They find that the minister has in every sermon to do with them, and he will not let them alone in their wicked ways, and this troubles them, and they had rather be let alone. Had you so? It is one of the most dreadful judgments in the world for God to say, let such a ministry, let a man, alone. It may be some of you may be weary of the faithful ministers of God. You may be rid of them, perhaps. God may take them away and you may be let alone. But yet know it is a brand of God's wrath upon you. Thirdly, this letting alone, it shows that God himself would let them alone too. It is an evidence of God's rejection of this people. It is as if a father that had used means to reclaim a rebellious child. And he has no regard what is said. At length saith a father, let him alone. What do you think is the meaning of this? If the father should say so, it is as much as if he should say, I have done with him. I will own him no more. I will meddle no more with him. If a servant should be stubborn and rebellious, and after much means used to reclaim him, should not be reclaimed, the master saith, let him alone. Let him take his own course. I will have no more to do with him. So here when God says, let them alone, it is as if he should say, let them take their own ways. Let them have their lusts to the full. Let them join and join and join to their idols and satisfy themselves with their own devices. Let them alone. From hence are these two notes that are of marvelous use. First, that God has a time to give over men to themselves, to say that a spirit shall no longer strive with them. Oh, many a man has felt the Spirit of God drawing, struggling, striving with him to draw him from such and such a wicked way. He has felt, I say, God's Spirit mighty and strong. What, will you still go on in this way of wickedness, uncleanness, drunkenness, oppression, injustice, profanation, hypocrisy, self-seeking, and the like? But he has been striving against the Spirit of God, and his lusts have ever gotten the victory over the Spirit. So that God saith, my Spirit shall no longer strive. I will not struggle in vain, but let him go on and have his own ways. Oh, it is dreadful when the Lord shall say of a drunkard, of an unclean person, of an hypocrite, I have been struggling so long with them, but yet their hearts have been opposite to me. Let them alone in that wicked way, and let them go on and satisfy themselves in their wicked devices. Psalm 81:12. They would none of me, saith God. They would none of my ways. So I gave them up to their own counsels. Oh, this is a dreadful gift. Many that will set their counsels against God's counsels, and will do it so long as that God at length gives them up to their own counsels. You will set your thoughts against my truth, your counsels against mine. Well, take your counsels, satisfy yourselves in your own ways. And you know that place in the latter end of the revelation. He that will be filthy, let him be filthy still. God says, let him alone. Will you be filthy? Be filthy then. And in Ezekiel 24:13, because when I would have purged them, they would not be purged. Therefore they shall be purged no more, God says. I will let them alone. I will never seek either by my word or by my works to do them any further good. They will be purged no more. And the reason of this is, number one, because God has no need of men. God does this to show that he has no need of you. Indeed, he seeks by his word to draw you to obedience to his service. And you stand off and draw from him and will not come on. At length, God will manifest himself that he has no need of your service. He can honor himself without you, though you perish as filth and dung everlastingly. God therefore will let men alone in their sins, because he does know how to fetch out glory to his own name from their sins. You will go on in your wicked ways. You will be stubborn and stout, saith God. Do you think to hinder me of my glory that way? Well, do you take your fill of your lusts? I know how to glorify myself out of that sin of yours, that you do so much against my glory. And therefore, take your fill of it. Observation 2. Secondly, which is the chief, it is the most woeful judgment of God upon any people, upon any person, when God shall say in his wrath, let him alone, go on. The word in the original is to say, let him be quiet and tranquil. That quiet will prove a dreadful storm. You know what the wise man saith, woe to him that is alone. Oh, woe to him that God saith, let him alone. That is, thus alone. Many men bless themselves when they are let alone and desire it. Let us alone, they say. Oh, but when God shall say, let them alone, this is a dreadful thing indeed. It was a fearful evil. It proved at least to be a fearful evil to Adam in paradise when God let him alone. When God left Adam to himself, what became of him? He undid himself, what in him lay, in all his posterity. When he was but left to those natural abilities, he had it proved in the conclusion, dreadful enough. Yea, and when God shall but leave his own saints, that have grace in them, shall but leave them for a little while to themselves, oh, what mischief comes of it. As in 2 Chronicles 32:31, Hezekiah was left to himself but a little while, and what a deal of misery did he bring upon himself, when God did but leave him to himself to try what was in his heart. What? Are there such evil consequences upon Adam in paradise, left alone, and the saints left alone here? Oh, what a dreadful thing is it, then, when God shall leave a sinner alone? I mean one that has nothing else but sin in him, a wicked wretch that has no grace at all in him. First, this is a testimony of very great disrespect in God of his creatures, and this that he accounts them not worthy of any further meddling with. He doesn't love them so well as to meddle any further with them. It is a sign, I say, of great disrespect of God to them, as if God should say, well, there are others indeed that are ill enough, that are very great sinners, but I have mercy for them. I intend to draw them to myself. I intend to show them the evil of their ways, and to turn them to me, that they may be saved. But as for these, I have nothing to do with them, God says. I have no mercy for them. Let them alone. Let them shift for themselves as well as they can. Secondly, the evil is great because they are then let alone when they are going apace to misery. To let a man alone when he is at home in his house and all things convenient about him is not so much. But if he should see a man in a mad humor running to the water to drown himself, and then to let him alone, this is a great judgment. Though when a man walks in the street in an ordinary way, no man will meddle with him, but let him alone. But if you'd see a man running into the fire, running to cast himself into a well or a pond, no one would then let him alone. But now the Lord sees sinners running headlong into misery, into the bottomless pit. And even then God says, let them alone. Again, they were in the midst of abundance of dangers, and yet God says, let them alone. When a man is in safety among his friends and you let him alone, it is not so much. But suppose you should know of one that were environed round about with adversaries, or that there were wild beasts round about him ready to devour him, and this message were brought to you, oh, there is such a friend of ours in great danger, and you should say, what if he be? Let him alone. Let him shift as well as he can. So we are to know that all sinners that are going on in their evil ways, they are in a woeful danger, dangers on every hand, and the Lord sees and takes notice that they are in the midst of dangers, yet God says, let them alone. They shall not have my protection and help. And this is a just punishment of God upon wicked sinners that will go on in their wicked ways. Fourthly, when God says, let them alone, he intends this as the making of a way to some fearful wrath that is to follow after. Let my mercy and goodness let them alone, but it is that they may fall into my wrath. And that will not let them alone. That will trouble them. Howsoever they cannot endure to be troubled by my word, by my messengers, by my spirit. But my wrath shall trouble them afterward. It shall not let them alone, as in Ezekiel 24:13 before quoted. Thou shalt not be purged from thy filthiness any more till I have caused my fury to rest upon thee. They shall not have any means to trouble them for a while, but at length my fury shall rest upon them. When the Lord shall seem to be quiet toward men and let them alone, it is but to make way for fearful wrath that is to come hereafter. It is a dreadful sign of reprobation for God to say of a people or of a person thus, let them alone. Reprobation is not for God to decree to damn men. You may mistake in that. That is not the first act of God upon any man. But thus, reprobation is this, for God to decree, whereas there are some that he has set his heart upon, He is resolved to do them good. There are others. He does not presently decree to damn them, but he does decree to leave them to themselves, that what they earn they shall have and no more. He will deal with them according to their works. He will do them no wrong. He will not be unjust to them. He will not damn them but for their sin. He never decrees to damn any but for sin. But he decrees this, he will leave them to a course of justice. I will give them what is fit for them to have in creation. I will make such a covenant with them, and then I will leave them to themselves. And what they work for they shall have. This is then another kind of reprobation, and worse than the first. That is reprobation for God to decree to leave a man to himself when he had no sin in him. Do not make man with sin at first. Suppose you were now made according to the image of God without sin, yet if God should decree to leave you fully and eternally to yourself, you were but a reprobate. But now when God sees a man in the gall of bitterness and in the bond of iniquity, now for God to leave him to himself, this is reprobation of the second kind. This is the most dreadful reprobation indeed.